The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with your host, the mother-daughter team of Dr. Gloria Horsley and Dr. Heidi Horsley. Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi have devoted their lives to helping individuals move forward after a profound loss and each week share stories of hope and understanding. They dedicate their show to their son and brother Scott and to others who have lost loved ones. Now join Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi and share the journey from grief and loss to hope and renewal.
Welcome to our show. I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley.
These shows are brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation, whose mission it is to help people find hope after loss. We hope that you'll join our Open to Hope family by going to our Open to Hope site, and also that you'll get involved with our social networking on Facebook. And we also have a great newsletter that comes out every month that tells you about the upcoming shows. So please go to opentohope.com and the grief blog and get involved with us. Well, Heidi, good morning.
Good morning, Mom.
And afternoon. I mean, well, it's noon at New York, right?
Yes, it's noon here, although it kind of looks like it's earlier because it's pretty overcast.
Yeah, have you had some snow there?
We've had the strangest weather because it's gone from tons of snow to being 70 degrees, back down to 40. I mean, it doesn't know what it wants to do at this point. So we don't have any snow right now. It's just kind of cold and a little bit dark.
Well, I'm in San Francisco. We've had some great weather here. Well, Heidi, this is our last show on Voice America after, I think, about 4 to 5 years.
Yeah, about 5 years, right? I know.
Incredible.
I know. That's sad. They've been amazing, and thank you so much to the team and to Ruben and to Jeff Bernard, the president. It's been a wonderful 5 years, hasn't it, Mom?
It really has. It's been a great 5 years. It's been a lot of fun working with them. Frustration, but that's part of what makes it fun. And, you know, this internet radio is really on the edge, and whoever thought we'd be doing this kind of thing a few years ago, and they've really supported and helped us through it. So it's been really great. Our numbers have gone up to like 40,000 downloads a month and 9,000 listeners, and it's great. But the good news is we're not going off the radio. We're going to do, internet. We're going to do a little different venue, which is we're just going to record 30-minute shows, commercial-free, and you will be able to hear it. We're still be on every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, noon Eastern Standard Time. You will be able to listen to our show, and next week we are going to have a woman who wrote The Greatest, which is a new movie coming out, and it is about the loss of a child with Susan Sarandon and Pierce Bronson. It's a pretty amazing movie, and it's going to be a great show. Shauna Festi. Shauna Festi wrote the show, and the most interesting thing is she listened to Healing the Grieving Heart the whole time she wrote it. And didn't she hide?
Yeah, and I loved, I got a message from her husband saying, would you call me because my wife made this movie. She listened every night before she went to bed to your shows. She really understood what the people in your audience, your listening audience, went through, and she just cried herself to, you know, cried as she listened to these shows. But she wanted to get it right. She wanted to be able to understand what people like our guest today, Mary Jane, and what my mom go through when they lose a child, and I think she got it right, don't you, Mom?
I do, too. She really did. I would highly recommend that you go see The Greatest. And also tune in on our show at 9 o'clock next Thursday morning and hear Shauna talk about the show and working with Pierce Bronson and working with Susan Sarandon. Should be a great show. I think Pierce Bronson's actually a widower, and I know Susan Sarandon's starred in a lot of very intense movies, so it'll be interesting
to
hear what Shauna has to say about it. Well, Heidi, we've got a great guest today, and we're going to be talking about a subject that you and I are very interested in, which is sudden death, because in 1983, when Scott was killed in an automobile accident, he and his cousin Matthew were killed immediately. So we've got, this is a good show because we know a lot of our folks out there have been involved with the sudden death and are looking for hope. So
absolutely.
I do want to.
And I have gone on to our Facebook page, Open to Hope Foundation, and posted Mary Jane's YouTube that she did with us, and her son was murdered, and she's going to talk to us about that and her own journey through the grief process and coming out and finding hope and how she did that. But please go on to Open to Hope Foundation Facebook, become a fan of ours or a friend of ours, and watch her video because it is powerful, and it'll only take you 3 minutes. It's a short clip, but it has a lot of hope in it, and it's a powerful video. So I will introduce her, Mom.
Yeah, I just wanted to say to our audience, too, you know, our Facebook's there for you, and you can go on and post things that you're doing.
Yeah,
if you've written a book or whatever you've done related to grief, loss, hope, and healing, that page is there for you. It's a social networking page.
Thank you for saying that, because I'm constantly telling our authors, if anything comes up, post it. Put it on. We want to build awareness of all the resources out there in the world for people that are grieving. So like my mom said, that page is for you to post things. Okay, so Mom, as you said, we're going to talk today about when death is sudden, and our first guest today is Mary Jane Cronin, and Mary Jane lost her 16-year-old son Jeremy to murder in 1998. She tells us that grief cannot be bypassed, hurried, or rushed, and that it always takes longer than one would wish. She is a hospice bereavement counselor and the author of December Morning. Welcome to the show, Mary Jane.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. It's good to talk to you. We met you at the ADAC, Association of Death Educator Conference, last year, right?
That's right.
Oh, my gosh. Last year, yeah.
We did. And I've got to tell you, Mom, I think Mary Jane, we didn't initially sign you up for a YouTube, right? You kind of came in and said, I'm willing and ready to do it. Is that right?
That is correct. I was there not as a speaker, but as a participant because I wanted to learn more about the death process and the grieving process. And when I heard you were doing the videos, I came up and asked if I could be part of that, and you were gracious enough to let me make my video.
And I've got to tell you what I remember about you the most. You had so much and have so much positive energy. That's what I remember. That's what sticks out in my mind. This woman is such a positive person with a lot of positive energy. So, yeah.
Well, the one thing that I feel connected is the title of your program, Open to Hope. Hope is what I have come to find through the 11 years of grieving. Because at the beginning, sudden loss is traumatic. And all you want to do is go inward and just kind of sit there and be numb. And I learned that there is hope.
Tell us a little bit about Jeremy, and I know he was a musician, and he sounds like your book, November Morning, is just a lovely book talking about him, pictures of him, and about the kind of kid he was, a great kid who made a mistake, and you were talking about how he thought with a 16-year-old mind. I think sometimes we have to think about that. But
absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about Jeremy and what happened.
Well, Jeremy, as I said, he was 16 years old and full of life. He was in high school in the music program, and then he got his GED. He was ready to go on and face the world. He was friends with everyone, and he was working full time once he got that GED. And someone asked him to do something that he shouldn't have said yes to. But as 16-year-olds, we feel we're not going to get hurt. Everything's going to be fine. And this was someone he had met not too long before at work. They made a connection together, and the boy was under the influence of medication and drugs, and he shot him. And it was something that was so surreal for my family, for my boys, and for the people that he went to school with, because he had so many friends. He was so well-liked. He was so popular with not only the students, but even the teachers. So this was like, how can this have happened to Jeremy? It was very difficult for everyone to process.
Wow. And you have three boys, right? Four boys?
Yes, I do. I do.
And your oldest son, I know, was 18 years old and actually held Jeremy while he died, which, you know, is an incredibly traumatic thing to think about.
That gives me chills as I hear you saying that, Mom.
You know, for the longest time, they kept the actual information away from me because they didn't think that I would be able to handle it. And looking back, I feel that they were wise to do that because my oldest son has not recovered. I don't know if he'll ever recover. He is working. He is existing. He is going through life, going through the motions. But all of our lives were completely altered, and we had to develop a new normal, a new way of living, a new way of looking at things.
Wow. Well, you know, I was kind of interested in reading your book because with your three boys and then this was your second husband.
Yes.
And he seemed to, from reading it, I was interested in the family dynamics. He seemed to, the boys were able to turn to him. And particularly Jeremy, right?
Yes, they bonded and they were friends with him. This my second husband was someone that I had known for a long time, so they knew him as a friend prior to us getting married. So it was helpful as they were maturing and going through their own adolescence and becoming young men that they did have someone that they could turn to for their own grief because they didn't want to share it with me.
Right.
They felt that if they told me how sad they were, I would become sad again, and then we would all cry.
Is that how you feel about parents sometimes, Hyde, that you don't want to make them sad?
Absolutely. I just did a conference on Saturday to a group of parents, and I said to them, a bereavement conference, I said, you know, oftentimes your kids don't grieve in front of you because they're trying to be good kids, not bad kids. We're trying to protect our parents from further pain.
Mm-hmm. And we don't. We want our parents. I think they wanted me to think that they were doing fine.
Mm-hmm.
So they pretended.
But you know what? I was struck. Heidi and I had a session. You know, talking to Heather for our new radio venue, and Heather, who is our youngest daughter, who was 14 at the time, made a comment, Heidi, that surprised me on the show, which was, I was okay. I was getting along fine. She didn't need to do more than that. She really mm-hmm. didn't want to do that. She had things she had to go on and do. And my friend, who's a pediatrician at the time, David Bradbent, Heidi, said to me, your kids will, they're biologically driven also, and they are not going to respond the way you do to it. And they have tasks, developmental tasks that have to go on. And they may not stop and grieve the way you think they should because they're being driven in a whole different way, which I thought was very interesting.
Right. It is.
You know, you're right about that, and because of the age differences in my children, from 18 to 10, they also all grieved differently, not only as being siblings, but by their ages.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Jamie, being the oldest son of mine, he felt responsible, you know, as being the oldest child.
Mm-hmm.
He carried a lot of the, I should have kept him safe. I should have been watching out for him. And that type of feeling carried through for quite a few years.
Well, we're going to go to break in a minute, and when we get back from break, I want to talk a little bit about how you've coped, what you've gone on to do, and how you've found forgiveness or whatever, maybe not even forgiveness, I don't know what it is, for the person who murdered Jeremy, because I know that's something for our audience out there, and particularly with suicide or murder, those kinds of things are sometimes some special issues that go on there. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. We're talking to Mary J. Cronin, and our topic today is When Death is Sudden. Please join us on Facebook and on the Grief Blog and Open to Hope. Stay tuned for more.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Have you lost a loved one and are wondering where to turn? Feeling overwhelmed by your grief? Join the thousands of people who have found hope and comfort as a part of the Open to Hope online community. It's free, it's safe, it will lighten your burden. Just type in opentohope.com and join our circle of support. Open to Hope is a charitable foundation. All donations are tax deductible.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate the chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. We are talking today with Mary Jane Cronin about When Death is Sudden. Welcome back, Mary Jane and Gloria.
Thank you.
Thanks, Heidi. Well, Mary Jane, I really like your book, and it's so interesting because you've just gone on and you've told the story, but you've done all sorts of other things. You've taken information from people that you found helpful, from books that you found helpful. You've got advice on behaviors you may feel, reflections. It's a very easy book to pick up and get a lot of great information from. So give us your website, and I'm sure we can get your book off your website or on Amazon, right?
Yes, you can. My website is MaryJaneCronin.com. You can order the book there. You can also order it at Amazon. I have a Facebook page, Become My Friend. I would love to talk with people about their losses and help them and give them insight. And November Morning has a fan page, and I would love for you to be fans.
So that's Mary Jane Cronin, C-R-O-N-I-N. And I bet you if you Googled November Morning, too, you get it. November mm-hmm. Morning, A Mother's Journey to Find Comfort and Solace Following the Death of Her Son. Well, Mary Jane, when we went to break, I was saying I wanted to ask you, you talk in your book a little bit about, you know, actually going to court a year after mm-hmm. Jeremy was mm-hmm. shot and saw his mother, and very poignant, and how you were angry, and then you saw her, and you realized there were two grieving mothers, not just one. And where are you with all that now?
Over years, it has softened. I've come to realize that the young man was, in fact, high. It was not a deliberate action. I can't say that I've completely forgiven him, because I will forever be without my son. But I have come to accept why it happened, and I've learned to grow from it.
And how do you feel? How many more years does he have in jail?
Seven.
Now, do you?
And he had 17 years, a 17-year sentence, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
And I remember reading on your web page, which I love, by the way, how you said when he was convicted or whatever and had to serve the time, it wasn't as big a relief as you thought because your son was still not coming back.
That's correct. When you're going through the court case, and I've talked to so many other parents who are doing that, you have an adrenaline rush, and you're on a mission, and you seem to think that, you know, if I do this one more thing, I'm not going to hurt so bad.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't bring them back. It doesn't end the hurt.
Yeah, and I hear people say that, you know, it's quite a disappointment when mm-hmm. it's all over and you thought you were going to feel so much better.
Yes.
Really tough. Well, now, one of the things you talk about in your book, because you read all these grief books after Jeremy was killed, and I was so interested, I said to my husband, get this, I didn't even think about it. There are 26,301 topic grief books on Amazon.
Wow.
And 800 of them are on death of a child, Heidi.
I had no idea.
That is so fascinating, because when Scott was killed in 1983, there was like one book out, which was Harriet Schiff's book.
Yeah.
The Bereaved Parent, which is still a great book, but
it's
so interesting how many people are writing now. Talk to us about writing as a healing process for you.
I think that is the reason why there's so many of them out there. Writing this book, the first 5 years after I lost Jeremy, I wrote letters to heaven. In my computer, I would talk to Jeremy, and I would tell him how I was feeling, and I would grieve, and I would work through that process. And those letters turned into the book eventually, and it helped me heal. I would sit there and I would type and I would cry and I would scream, and I would get all of my grieving out through writing. And after people started buying November Morning, they told me how much writing had helped them, so I have written a new book called Writing Through Your Grief that's actually coming out next week, and it's a guidebook. It gives you prompts to answer questions about emotions and back losses and also taking care of yourself. So I'm very excited about that.
That I love to hear you're excited, don't you, Heidi?
Absolutely. I really, yes. I love to hear how you actually found hope after such a tragedy.
Now, you talk about with murder, and I think murder, there's a little different aspect to it, because the fear that it's an unsafe world and the frustration and powerlessness must be incredible.
It is. It was then, and it is still now. I live in a smaller town in Florida, and for this to happen, you suddenly realize that you are not as safe as you thought. My other boys, I would not let them go anywhere unless I knew exactly where they were, and I made them call me when they were at places. And I still, if I call their cell phones and they don't answer, I get nervous. And I realize that it's something I'm always going to have, because now I realize no matter how much you try to keep them safe, you can't.
Yeah. Well, I think that holds true across the board, because I can tell you when people in my life that I love will be like 25 minutes late, for some reason, for a second in my head, I think, oh, well, they must have died,
mm-hmm.
which is so crazy, because I would never have moved directly to that thought prior to my brother's death, ever.
It's interesting you should say that, Heidi, because my thought always is, well, I might as well sleep because there's nothing I can do about it anyway.
Yeah.
That's because you're so much further along in your healing.
Well, that is true.
So no, I want to talk, in the back of your book, you have a little section that I really was taken by, and that's myths.
Mm-hmm.
She just has a few myths, Heidi, that
I like those. They're also on her website. They're great.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about some of the myths? What's your kind of your favorite thought about myths? Oh, I like this one. Fiction. Sleeping pills, antidepressants, or alcohol mm-hmm. will help you get through this pain.
But that is something that our world is conditioned. I mean, you go to a doctor and they want to give you pills immediately. And all that does is postpone your grieving. It numbs you, but when that pill wears off, you're still there with that loss. And you're still there with your emotions. So although there are times that the antidepressants are beneficial in those first few months, especially with traumatic loss, counseling has to be along with it. You have to be talking while you're taking the medication, or as soon as you stop, you're going to be right back where you started.
But and one of the issues with it I see is I ran a Compassionate Friends group, and I was talking to somebody at the meeting last time, and she's somebody I've known for a while, and she's on antidepressants and can't feel, and she'd like to feel more. And I said, well, go out, talk to your doctor about going off your antidepressants. You know, that might help you. So they can, dull it a little bit too. But, you do need to talk to your doctor, and particularly need to look at it if you were on them prior to the loss. But we do. There are a lot of giving too many medications. Heidi, have you got any thoughts on that?
I just have a thought on another myth that I liked that Mary Jane had, and that was, I'm not going crazy. The idea that we feel crazy in our grief, and we do almost feel like we're losing it.
I think we are crazy. I don't know. Mary Jane, what do you think?
I think it's a normal part of the grief process to feel that way.
It is a natural part of the grief process, because you're faced with emotions and feelings that you may have never felt in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And you suddenly feel like you're the only person going through it. Not being able to go to do your job, not remembering where your keys are, getting in the car and driving and forgetting where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
These are very common things that are happening while you're in those early stages of grief. And you
also,
think, I'm the only one doing this.
Yeah. Also flaring up. Sometimes, as I said, I'm around a lot of bereaved people, and sometimes they flare up at each other or flare up at me or something, and my husband and I just kind of look at each other and say, we know where you are.
And just to be assured for everybody out there that's there, it's not going to last forever. That was my biggest fear. Is I don't even recognize myself. Is this how I'm going to be forever? And you're not going to be like that forever.
Absolutely not.
Well, yes, you're not. You're
another one I like, Mary Jane, that you've got is support groups are for weak people.
And that's a myth.
It is a myth, because you think you need to do this on your own. And if you don't do it on your own, then you're weak. Well, no, one of the strongest things you can do is ask for help.
And I think guys particularly have problems with that, because, we're supposed to be strong, take care of the family, and they also you know, not so much now. If you're working, you both are out working. But if the wife's staying home, you know, it's they're out there doing their job. They got to get that job done.
Well, the nice thing they're doing for groups for men and Compassionate Friends that you mentioned, and also some of the area hospices and churches, is they're offering special groups for men, and they gear them in a different direction to help men, because they do grieve a little bit differently, but they need to have permission to grieve.
Right. Well, so, Heidi, here's one for you, the myth. The younger the child, the less intense your pain should be. You know, just even in miscarriages, right?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I know there is this belief, oh, well, the child, you were only pregnant, or the child was only one or two or three. That doesn't matter. You not, even when you've had a miscarriage, and I've had several, you are not only grieving the loss of the child you were carrying, but you are grieving your entire future as you thought it was going to look. So it's a lot more complex than it looks to the outside world.
Yeah. Now, you're talking about behaviors you may feel, too, in your book. I like that section, Mary Jane, where you talk about you may find yourself eating too much or too little. That's really important because, you know, what you eat is going to give you that energy, right?
That's correct. And taking care of yourself is so important because when you're grieving, you almost want to give up. And I'm one of those people who eat too much. My nerves, I want to fill my feelings with food, whereas I have a friend who I have to remind her to eat when she's nervous. She can't even think of eating. And it's tied into those emotions that we have.
Yeah, and I remember having the most amazing food that we've ever, and the most food we've ever had in our house after Scott died, because everyone brought food.
Right.
And thinking, and I was looking at it going, I can't eat any of this.
Yeah.
I can't eat, and yet there's this amazing food around me, but I couldn't eat.
Yeah, one of the problems with that food a lot of times is there's a lot of carbo, you know, people bring in casseroles and cakes,
right.
And whoa. Yeah.
Yeah, people don't come by with carrots and salad.
It's true, it's comfort food.
That's right.
Exactly. Well, what about, now you talked a little bit, I didn't have this as much as I think you did, and I wondered if it might have been due to murder. Wanting to decline invitations and wanting to be a little more isolated.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that a little bit.
Well, it's sort of like what Heidi said about realizing the world isn't safe. I didn't want to come out of my house. I didn't want to put myself in a vulnerable position with people I didn't know. I didn't want people asking me about Jeremy because I would burst out into tears. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to have to tell the story again. Because everybody was curious.
Right, yeah. Well, so there I am out there, and I'm listening to you and saying, that's me. How do I get out? What's your suggestion for me today?
Well, the first thing is you need to be gentle with yourself. Realize that the grief process takes time, and for sudden losses, such as accidents or murder or suicide, it's going to take even longer because we don't want to believe it. So our healing process is sometimes postponed. Be gentle with yourself. Talk to somebody you trust. If it's a friend, if it's one of the compassionate friends, if it's somebody at church, somebody you feel safe enough to share your feelings with. Because as you process, write about it, talk about it, make collages. Anything that is telling your intellectual mind that it's happening will help your healing process start.
Well, Mary Jane Cronin, thank you so much for being on the show today, and we really appreciate it, and we hope that people will go to Open to Hope Foundation Facebook site, because on that site today is a YouTube with Mary Jane Cronin, so you can go to her website at maryjanecronin.com, and you can even watch her on YouTube. And thank you, Mary Jane, and thank you for all you're doing for the world.
And thank you for everything you're both doing, too. It's a wonderful help.
Thanks, Mary Jane.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to break now. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. We will continue to talk about sudden death when we come back with Janice E. Brown. Please visit us on our website, thegriefblog.com, and Open to Hope. We will be posting our show on those sites next Thursday at 9 a.m. California time, 12 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Stay tuned for more. We'll be right back.
opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This podcast is brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation, which also offers you a free monthly e-newsletter containing current articles, book and movie reviews, as well as podcast schedules. Just go to opentohope.com, click on newsletter, and receive your monthly newsletter filled with hope and support. Open to Hope is a charitable foundation. All donations are tax deductible.
Hello, this is Dr. Heidi Horsley, host of Healing the Grieving Heart. Have you lost meaning and purpose in your life since your loved one died? Does each day feel like an effort? You do not have to go through this difficult time alone. As a bereaved sibling and licensed psychologist with over 15 years' experience, I will work with you in a collaborative, supportive way. If you live in the New York tri-state area, you can contact me at 917-338-6396 or email me at drheidihorsley@gmail.com. That's drheidihorsley@gmail.com. To learn more about my private practice, visit my website at www.drheidihorsley.com. Thank you.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. We are talking today about when death is sudden with our second guest, Janice E. Brown. Janice is a hospice chaplain for St. Joseph Hospice in Orange, California, and works as a parish nurse for a Presbyterian congregation. She has taught classes on death and dying and has facilitated grief groups for over 15 years. Welcome to the show, Janice.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here. Very happy.
Hi, Janice. It's great to have you on. I think I picked you up, didn't I, from, did you do something on sudden death with ADEC?
I go to ADEC all the time, the Association of Death Education and Counseling. Yes, ma'am. I don't know if I did anything specific for them. I've attended and kind of participated in discussions and things like that. So
maybe that's where we... I wanted to remind our audience that the Association of Death Educators Conference is in Kansas City. It starts next week, next weekend. It's a pretty darn interesting conference with people, pastors and professional counselors and anybody who's interested in death education, hospice workers. And so if you have any interest or inclination in that area or if you're curious, look online at ADEC.
And I will be there.
And we will be there.
That's right.
Heidi and I are going to be presenting. Heidi's
On self-care with the president of ADAC, Howard Winokur.
Oh.
We're going to do a panel on how you can take care of yourself in this field. And my mom and I are doing something together also, right, Mom?
Yeah, we're doing it on... What are we
finding hope after loss.
Finding hope after loss, of course.
Excellent. Well, I will introduce myself when I get there.
Anyway, it's going to be good. Heidi's going to be presenting on Friday, and I'm going to be presenting on Saturday. So if you're in the Kansas City area, please check in and come in and hear us present. We were talking about sudden death, and Janice, what's your thought about? You've worked with dying people and people who have had a sudden death.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is different? Is it different in the anticipated versus the sudden?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've been in hospice for like 20, 25 years, and so as I was thinking about the topic, I thought it's very interesting that even the patients that I have who are terminally ill over a long period of time, there is that sense within ourselves that we really don't ever expect to die, even when we know the reality of what's happening. So in terms of patients who are still alive, sometimes their death seems very unreal, like sudden to them, you know, and this really is happening. It takes them a while for some people to really integrate that reality in their own head, even if they have a terminal illness and they're declining. So I find that fascinating because it's not like they just kind of know this is happening and it's
there's some kind of an acceptance of it. I mean, yeah.
It takes a while for many people
to
see
that. So it sounds
that.
Like the will to live is strong, and people are going to hold on as long as possible.
And I always say to people, sometimes it's like reality in life, and this would be for sudden death where it was like you woke up in the morning and you got a phone call that, you know, your husband was killed in an accident, or I was listening to the previous person in terms of child murdered and such. But so that's like really sudden, you know, sudden in the sense you get that phone call. But I think there's that thing about reality. I sometimes tell my patients is that it's like a sand thing with where you do the timer for the eggs. I said it's kind of like you turn it over, and it takes this time for that reality to sift down into one's consciousness that this reality of the loss of the person or of myself is true. And everybody's sand timer may be smaller and bigger depending on, I think, on their own values, on their belief systems, on how much of life they face in reality in general, and you know, a number of factors like that.
Mm-hmm. You know, I do a Compassionate Friends group, and it's very interesting because when we go around, and we usually go around and everyone talks about their loss, and just briefly, and it's interesting, and we kind of call it a check-in, is that when I talk about Scott was killed in an automobile accident, and he and his cousin actually burned to death, and, you know, people are, you know, it's shocking, and the people who have had, their kids have had a long-term illness will say, wow, you know, I don't know what I'd do, you know, if that had happened to me. I had him for a year or her or whatever, and, you know, and they were ill, and, you know, I had this opportunity to say goodbye and all that. And I'm thinking, wow, I would never want to go through that.
So in other words,
I am so glad Scott wasn't sick.
So in other words, it doesn't matter how your children or siblings die. I feel like on some level it's traumatic regardless of the way it happened.
I absolutely agree with you. I think that it is kind of interesting and does make you smile when you have people say, well, I would never want to go through that. You know, I had a chance to, or I don't know if I could deal with what you're dealing with. I do think there's this thing, you know, being a nurse and a chaplain and all that gives me kind of a variety of ways of looking at life, I guess. And so I think there's the fact that one deals with one's real situation, and when you hear someone else's circumstances, you listen to it, but you also process what you did, and you think again, like they verbalized, I couldn't do that. I don't know how I'd handle that. You were so brave, or I'm glad I had the time too. And so it is a fascinating thing that I think we look at our own experiences. That's been my experience with others, and they kind of say, well, I couldn't go there. I'm dealing with what I'm dealing with, and that's my reality.
You know, I think also that, and I would like to talk about this when we come back from break, it really says something about resilience of the human spirit. Mm-hmm. It shows how we take things and make them so they're survivable, mm-hmm. and that we can deal with them and be resilient around those things. And sometimes it, you know, takes time, and we can talk a little bit more about finding hope and resilience after loss. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. We're talking to Janice E. Brown, and we are talking about when death is sudden. Please visit us on Facebook and opentohope.com. And remember that this is our last show on Voice America, but you can pick us up on Thursday at 9 o'clock Pacific Standard Time at our website, thegriefblog.com, and the Open to Hope site. Please stay tuned for more.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Whether you are a new or frequent listener to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi's podcasts, the Horsleys value your connection. We invite you to join our Facebook and Twitter circles of support. We'll keep you up to date about Open to Hope Foundation events, new podcasts, and YouTube spots. Just go to Facebook or Twitter and search for Open to Hope. Open to Hope is a charitable foundation. All donations are tax deductible.
Hello, I'm Eric Kipple, former quarterback of the Detroit Lions and outreach coordinator of the University of Michigan Depression Center. It gives me great pleasure to announce the publication of my autobiography, Real Men Do Cry. a quarterback's inspiring story of tackling depression and surviving suicide loss, written with Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley, and published by Quality of Life. Real Men Do Cry takes you on my journey of fame and fortune to unbearable pain and depression following the death of my 15-year-old son, Jeff, and gives practical information on the warning signs and risks of depression. My story ends with an uplifting message of hope and recovery. I have faith that if I have made it, you can too. You can visit my website to learn more about my book at erichhipple.com and more about depression on depressioncenter.org. Thank you.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi for our final segment of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who have suffered the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, we are talking about When Death is Sudden with Hospice Chaplain Janice Brown. Welcome back, Janice and Gloria.
Thank you. Thanks, Heidi. Well, when we went to break, I was saying that I wanted to talk a little bit about resilience and, mm-hmm. and accepting change. But before we do that, Janice, I know you give a lot of presentations, right, and you're willing to speak around.
Oh yes. I really, really love to share what I've been given in terms of experience.
Well, tell us how people would get a hold of you.
Well, they can call me actually on my home phone number. I can give that. I don't mind.
Okay.
It's probably the best way to call and just leave a message. It is area code 714-974-6036.
Okay, great. And so you can get a hold of her if you have some event going on that you'd like her to speak at.
She and I am on AOL with my my first name, Janice, JanicePMDIV, like in Victor, at AOL.com. So that's another way.
Too. Great. Okay, there we go.
Be great.
So you've got her email and her telephone number there, and she is in Orange County. That's her home base, but I bet she'd be willing to travel around if you've got some kind of an event.
Absolutely. I really feel I've been given a great life of tremendous experiences and opportunities to walk with people in their life, and so to be able to share that and help people, I just feel so blessed to do that.
So talk a little bit about resilience, and you were saying that people may have difficulty changing, right?
Well, I think that change is, I do some workshops for another company on change theory and change in life and grief and loss and letting go and all. And so I think that change is just something that we all, some people change quicker than others, are able to adjust. And so I think when we're talking about death, whether it's sudden or long-term loss, you know, dying, I think that each of us has kind of a way of coping with how things change in our life, and whether we do that fairly quickly and adjust, or if we really fight it a little bit and don't face it and have to deal with some other things. So I think that's an underlying thing that happens for us as human beings, and then the death of someone just kind of brings that out, you know, in terms of our behavior.
Mm-hmm. So what about religion? You're a pastor. What kind of a role does religion play?
Okay. Not a pastor. I'm a laywoman who actually has been to seminary, and so I'm a chaplain, but not affiliated with any particular church as a pastor or minister. So, which is kind of freeing because I don't come from a particular tradition in that way in terms of my work. Faith traditions, I think, can be very supportive. I think faith communities, the person's beliefs in God or the afterlife or however they express it can be very supportive for some and mean everything in the world to help them to cope. On the other hand, sometimes, and I've seen this happen in the groups which I've done, people struggle because their concept of their faith and how they've kind of processed it, that if I'm a good person, if I've done a good job, I've heard people say that, I've lived in a good life, I've raised my kids, and suddenly this happened, and they'll use the phrase, how could God do this to me? And so they have to really, I always believe that faith or spirituality is always a deepening process, and so I often said, you have to let go of the way in which you believed before and now struggle to find that belief or some belief in this new experience.
What about families where
one person believes and another doesn't. I've found that, you know, people can be pretty ruthless about it, you know, saying something like, you know, on the side, if they had a stronger religious belief and that they would be with them in the hereafter, this wouldn't be so hard on them.
You can imagine in my work I deal with that a lot because of families involved in the care of our patients. I try to be kind of a mediator there. I for people who have a strong faith belief, I try to support that for them, but oftentimes the family members or a patient or the people I deal with in grief groups, I try to help them to find the meaning and the what I call the transcendent values of their life, which give meaning and purpose. And those things like where they've known love, where they've had hope, where they've experienced peace, where they've experienced trust, and give them that sense that for those who aren't particularly religious, traditional believing, to find that life, the meaning of the life that they've had, and use those resources to help them to deal with this loss and grief.
I like those words, meaning and purpose. How about you, Heidi?
Absolutely. And that's what we always talk about.
Yeah, I'll just share a quick example if it would helpful. I had a farmer, for example, as a patient, and he grew up on a farm and raised his kids, six or seven kids on a farm in Iowa, and he was terminally ill and dying. And he said to me, I said, well, you've lived such a wonderful, good life, and I said, you're such a faith-filled person, and he goes, no, I'm not. I just lived my life. I've been a farmer, and now I'm ill. And I said, no. I said, do you realize how much faith it takes to plant? I said, to plant seeds and to believe that nature, that God, that the universe will come to your assistance to make those grow and to cultivate that, the patience that takes and the belief, the love you have for your family to do this year after year. And he looked at me and he smiled and he said, I never thought of myself that way. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, then think of yourself that way because that's part of who you are. And I think for that gentleman who was in the, you know, was still with us, but I think the same experience I've had with people after the death of someone.
Try to look for what you've done in the past. And you're helping them do that, which is great, because particularly after a sudden death, you're so disorganized, it's hard to find any meaning or purpose or, you know, just getting your foot out of bed on the floor, putting on a sock.
I think the meaning and purpose or the ability to go on after death doesn't just kind of come up one morning on a Tuesday at 9:30. You know, I think it is, there is that dark night for a long time. There is that sense of not having your feet on the ground, of life has kind of, being in California, I can say kind of earthquake in your life, you know. It's all of a sudden everything isn't as solid as you kind of thought it was. And so there is that time, and I think that's where when other people are there for you, be it family or a friend or a grief group, I think that's where part of that hope to keep going or that resilience begins to form within a person, and it happens often because someone else is there for you for that time.
Well, with sudden death, what if I feel like there was unfinished business? I mean, what do you suggest? I didn't say goodbye. We had a fight. And they walked out the door, you know, and those are my last memories.
Yeah, and you know, that's happens often, because I think as human beings, we don't always live our life walking and talking to people thinking, I better say what I need to say because I never know. I think that when we've had an experience like that, we've kind of learned from it, and then maybe the next time or in life, I'll do something different. I think it's a really time-consuming process to forgive oneself.
Mm-hmm.
And to recognize that we don't live each moment perfectly, you know, or fully in terms of every, we say and we do every single thing that we want to do fully in every moment. We never do that when we're in day-to-day life. But when sudden death comes, all of a sudden those moments that we recognize like in daily life suddenly become extremely crucial and really create part of the grieving process, making it more difficult.
So I'm normal if I have these thoughts and feelings.
Yeah.
Well, it's almost time for us to close our show, and I wonder, do you have some advice for particular advice for people who are suffering after loss? In terms of finding help, of course.
Sure, of course. I think one of the things I've often shared with people is to recognize, as you share people your experience or you mention something that happened, to watch their behavior and look for the people in your life or church or neighborhood who, when you ask, say to them, you know, this happened, who kind of look at you and go, oh, I'm so sorry, and kind of you could sense that moving on. Or the person who looks at you and kind of gives you eye contact and says, oh, I'm so sorry, how are you doing? And there's the tone of voice, the behavior. I've often said to people in my grief groups that if you begin to share so much with someone who really isn't, quote, listening, you feel so bad because you've shared. But if you're paying attention to some of their behaviors, that's the person that can be a sign of hope to you. Grief groups are great. And
I love that. It's a time to select people that can help you.
Absolutely.
And also teach them how to help you. You don't have a contract, I like to say, with everybody right now.
You don't have to spill your whole story out to everybody. I think you learn to choose your words.
Right.
And otherwise you get yourself, as I said to someone, very much in trouble because suddenly you realize they can't go there with you. They just can't.
Right. Well, Heidi, do you have any last comments that you want to make on that?
I was just going to say, and some people can't, and I also like the idea of looking at people's body language, because sometimes they don't know what to say, but their body language is there with you, mm-hmm. and they're really empathizing, but they just don't have the right words.
Mm-hmm. Very much so, yeah. Yeah.
Well, Mary Jane, Janice, thank you so much for being on the show, and I want to thank Mary Jane for being on the show, too. It's been
a great
show today. And we hope that we'll have more contact with you, and we're going to see you at ADAC.
I'll look forward to it.
Yeah, make sure you come up and grab us.
I will do that.
Thanks, Janice.
You're very, very welcome.
Thank you. It's time to close our show, and I want to thank our guests, Janice and Mary Jane, and want to remind you that this is our last show on Voice America. We have loved it. It's been great. But you can still reach us through thegriefblog.com, and we will be posting a show there at 9 o'clock California time, 12 o'clock Eastern Standard Time every Thursday. So please stay tuned and sign up for our Facebook and for our newsletter by going to thegriefblog or opentohope.com. And we want you to remember, everyone out there in the world, to remember that life is full of love and hope. And we know that it may feel hopeless to you right now, but we want you to remember that you need not walk alone. Right, Heidi?
Absolutely. And I want to thank Mary Jane and Janice for being on the show and offering people hope. And thank you so much, Voice America, for helping us get our message out to the world.
Oh.
You have been listening to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley on Healing the Grieving Heart, heard live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on health.voiceamerica.com and worldtalkradio.com. Healing the Grieving Heart is archived on thegriefblog.com as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites. Tune in again next week, and thanks for listening.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.